Well, we're going to do the rest of the evening now, and it's something we've done every year, and it's what I call the bonding time of the conference, where people, particularly are here for the first time, will get to get a feel for all of those who are here. And we will be turning the mic over to anyone who wants to come up and just tell some bits and pieces about their story and introduce themselves. And we have a 3-minute limit, and I'm going to have a little sign. I'm so used to Richard Packham being here and doing the timing, I forgot to get somebody to do it. So when you have 1 minute left, you're going to get this. And when you're done, you're going to get this. But I do need a stop. I mean, I need a watch with a good second hand, because my guy can barely read. If somebody can hand me one that they've got, I'll be the timer. So I'm going to turn the time over to you, and we'll go on for probably at least an hour, maybe a little bit longer. And I then welcome anyone to come up and be the first brave person.
Hi, my name's Brian. This is my first Ex-Mormon conference. I'm thrilled to be here.
Control Z.
I am Control Z on Postmo. I don't know if everybody posts, but that's me. I felt moved by the Spirit to come up and share. It was great to hear Micah speak for the first time, seeing you face to face, and meeting so many of you. I'm just thrilled to be able to share my experience with other people that have been through the same thing, and the courage and the torment that you face when you make that decision to leave, because it's really hard to stare your family and your social circle and so many of your friends in the face and say, I can't do this. And it's really hard. And I admire the courage of everybody here who has been through that. And I'm so grateful for people like Chad Spute and Sue and Jeff Ricks, who have made a vehicle, a way for us to realize that we're not the only ones, that I'm not the only one who looks around and go, holy crap, this is ridiculous. Why would anybody believe this? This doesn't make any sense. Anyway, I'm profoundly grateful for the community that needs to grow, and we need to reach out, because I know a lot of people have those, so many issues on the shelf, and that shelf's going to break eventually if they give it enough thought. Anyway, thanks for everybody's support as a community. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
My name's Dennis, and I left the church a few years ago. Is that better?
Yeah.
I better hold it. I left the church a few years ago, and I was asked by a non-Mormon friend who was forced out of medical practice if I had asked you if you knew somebody that could help her in her legal battle. So if you can think of somebody that I could give to them to point the way, then let me know. And I also wanted to tell you of an experience I told some of you online, but I live in a rural area in northern Utah, and I live on a little lane. There's about 9 homes, and I had trouble finding a job, so I had to move. This was after I left the church. I moved to Elko and worked for about a year, and that didn't turn out very well, so I moved back. And while I was gone, I grew this facial hair, and you have to know that. And I was walking my dog last summer, and a girl from the neighborhood drove up. She stopped. She said, "Don't you ever come near my house again." And she drove off. And so I couldn't ask what she was talking about. And about 3 or 4 days later, I got a visit from a detective, and he's from the county. And he proceeded to tell me about an investigation on me by my neighbors, because they had found footprints around their home. And I was seen walking my dog, which I did all the time. And, of course, I have shoes, so I make footprints. So But they started the investigation in January, ended it in February, and this girl said this to me in July. And the detective said, a few days later, he said, the only reason I'm talking to you now is because we got 8 calls yesterday. So they were still calling the police after they said, yes, we put up cameras, motion detectors, we watched you walk your dog, we know all the cats in the neighborhood, and you did nothing wrong. But they were still calling, and this can happen. I was surprised that it happened to me. I was shocked, and I went through all the feelings that you talked about, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, I hope you can forgive me, but last year you were giving us 5 minutes, so I planned 5 minutes worth of talking. I'll try to get in as quickly as possible, and I will talk fast. My name is Eric Davis, and this is mine and my wife's second year here at the conference. First thing, I just want to say how much I love Boyd K. Packer. I call him the gift that keeps on giving. You never know what's going to come flying out of that man's pie hole, but you know it's going to piss somebody off, and he does more to grow the ex-Mormon community, I think, than any other person in recent memory. So on behalf of ex-Mormons everywhere, I'd like to tell Mr. Packer, thank you. And to anyone else out there who still believes that God chose that man to tell the truth to the world, I have 2 words to you.
Not so. Why would our Heavenly Father do that to us?
In case you can't figure it out by my outfit, I still haven't decided where I stand on the same-sex marriage issue. But it was 2 years ago that the situation in Prop 8 helped me learn some things about the church that I didn't know before and helped me find my way out of the church. One of the teachings that I've been thinking about recently is a straight and narrow path. And I've come to the conclusion that it's not an actual walkway that gets a person to the celestial kingdom. Rather, it's a list of qualifications that makes a person a good Mormon. Straight and narrow, of course. Last year, I got up here and introduced myself briefly, and I said that I had been inspired to kind of write down some things in my life that got me to the point where I am today. And I'm pleased to say that in May of this year, that little writing project became this book called House of Faith, House of Cards. So if any of you are interested, please come see me afterwards. I'll tell you more about it. But this year, I'd like to just briefly introduce you to my wife, since she's terrified to speak in public herself. I thought I'd write down a few words. These are all words that I came up with by myself. I didn't have any professional musicians or anything give me inspiration for this. First class and fancy free. She's high society. She's got the best of everything. And what could a guy like me ever really offer? She's perfect as she can be. I mean, why should I even bother? Yeah. 'Cause she's so high above me. Anyway, no. I told Tal on Facebook that I wouldn't just stand up here and sing a song the whole time, but how great is this? Tal freaking Bachman is in the house. Everybody give it up for Tal. But just in closing, real quickly, and I'll be out of here. My wife, like me, is an aspiring writer, but she's not writing about herself. She's into some other different things like paranormal and romance and things like that. She has a blog, and feel free to introduce yourself to her. And she's trying to get more people to follow her blog. And she's talking about her own life experiences and some of the things that she's writing about. But anyway, we are Eric and Stephanie Davis, and we're excited to meet and get to know a lot of you, especially those of you that are here for the first time, and I thank you for your time.
Good evening. My name is Maura Snow. My husband, Doug Snow. I post on the recovery board occasionally as Ms. Mom. I refer to Dr. Dad. I mean him. He never posts. The good news is we've been out of the church for 22 years. The bad news is we're still here. Recovery is a lifelong process, and we're proud to be in it. It is possible to raise four wonderful, good citizen sons outside the church. They range in age from 21 to 31. We're thrilled to have them. They're regular, normal people. And we live in the state of Massachusetts, where our neighbors who are gay can actually marry one another, and it really doesn't make a difference.
We just wanted to add that it's been 22 years, we're still here, but it does get better.
Well, Sue, I also planned on 5 minutes from last year, and I have whittled this down to get it down to 5 minutes. I don't think I can do it in the moment, get it down to three, so this is the way it goes, but I got to get it out. I've got to tell what happened. My story begins in the 1960s. I was just finishing up my junior year of college at BYU, and my bishop called me in and asked me to go on a mission. Well, I was very devout, but I was an introvert, and I had never had a burning desire to go on a mission. But I was afraid that if I didn't go, I would feel guilt, because, you know, I had been called. So they sent me not very far to California. The California mission was just a great big numbers game. How many people you could convince to get baptized? We had more baptisms than any of the other missions, and there was competition and pressure. Every month, our top 10 missionaries who had the most baptisms were rewarded by being allowed to go through the Los Angeles Temple. We had a mission conference where they brought in a very successful door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman who taught us how to manipulate people. We even did telemarketing. Just pick names at random out of the phone book and give them a call. I could not adjust. I disliked the telemarketing even more than I disliked going door to door. I didn't like the pressure. I didn't want to be there. But I couldn't go home. My parents would have been humiliated. I was consumed by fear. Yes, I had fear of confronting those strangers about my religion. But more than that, I had a fear that if I did not do a good enough job on that mission, God would judge me. And so I went into survival mode, trying to save my eternal life. I took those negative emotions, which I should not have had, and I stuck them into the corner of my brain, closed a door on them, and denied them. And then I put a great big smile on my face, and I went out and I pretended that I liked doing God's work. And sometimes those negative feelings would try to sneak out and bite me. Usually it'd be early in the morning when I first woke up, and I'd have this heavy feeling inside, and I would think, oh, I just can't do it. And then I would tell myself, just make it through this day. And I'd make myself get up, get going, and get back into my routine, and then I would close the door on those emotions again. If you have some emotions inside of you and you ignore them, deny them for a long time, like 18 months, that is not good for your mental health. Now, what I did got me through that mission. But when I got home, I started having problems with depression. Now, in the 60s, they didn't talk about depression like they do now. I didn't know what was wrong with me. You know, I soon realized I was having trouble adjusting to real life after that mission. But the trouble never went away. Many times I thought it was my character. I had bad character. Within 2 years, I even started allowing myself to question the church because my religion was not helping me. And when I really looked at Mormonism, really looked at it, with everything I knew about it, including that lovely temple ceremony, I just used the logic I had learned in the classroom at BYU and came to the conclusion in the end that the probability of the Mormon church being true was close to nil. So I became inactive, a non-believer. I broke my mother's heart, and I still had my problem. I suffered and stumbled through life. It was 18 years before I discovered the name for my affliction, that is, other than bad character, depression. At that time, I went on medication, the antidepressants. That was in the 80s. It took another 18 years before I found the help I needed to retrain my brain so that I was finally normal again. After 36 years, I'm lucky I lived so long. By that time, I was in the 21st century. I have been Prozac-free for 8 years. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm John from Portland, Oregon. We got a great group in Portland. Sue is there. A lot of them. Beautiful part of the country to live in. I think the things that I wanted to talk about just for a couple minutes is the whole thing about judgment. You know, I grew up in the church, and I was just constantly judging. This was good. This was bad. Do this. Do this. It was like I defined myself as a person who could judge. And, you know, my wife is very uncritical, very non-judgmental. She's a great example for me. So what I'm trying to learn in my life now is to just stop judging. You know, it wears me out. And I think some of it is, you know, from my upbringing, and I don't know. So that's kind of what I'm working on, and I'm getting better about it. And the other thing I'm working on is this thing called friends. You know, I grew up in the church. My social life was the Mormons. I had other friends, of course, but we all, you know, all this stuff was Mormonism. And so about 5 or 6 years ago, I discovered basically that, you know, the Nephites are imaginary people. And it was, wow. You know, it was like, okay, a lot of stuff makes sense. No wonder. No wonder they can't find any archaeology, you know. You know, and it was no wonder they can't find any DNA. You know, imaginary people don't have any DNA. So I had to have my wife install some bars on my shower because I would get in the shower and I would laugh so hard about some of this stuff, what I used to believe, you know. Woo! It was a wild one, and I have a kind of an interesting job where I get a chance to talk with quite a few different people, and after about the third or fourth kind of little shift we work together, we kind of talk about coffee, you know, and then we talk a little bit about religion, and I'm telling you, people do not have a favorable view of Mormons. When they really can see that you're, you know, kind of neutral, they'll tell you the truth, and it's not what I thought it was a long time ago. So I'm learning about this whole friends thing, and you know, I spend a little bit of time by myself because, you know, your social life just kind of changes. And my dog, thanks my dog, you know, I walk the dog a lot, right, and brush the dog, and you know, it's just very therapeutic. And you know, I thank my wife, Janet. Stand up for a minute. This is a great gal. I baptized her. I baptized her, and when I found this out, we kind of talked about it. She said, I'm sticking with you. Thanks, Janet.
I cut in line. I don't know who was next, but hi, my name is Dana Dahl, and I'm also Dolly Mama and Insanity, and I would like to welcome the Ex-Mormon Forums group that's with me on the back line there, and, oh, sorry, and my husband, Bab. That stands for Badass Brave Billy, because he was brave enough to marry me. And I would also like to say I am so amazed at the brilliant, incredibly talented people that I seem to meet that come out of the church. And not that everyone inside the LDS church is boring and tedious and really, really, really limited, but it seems that the ones that make their way out are the best and the brightest. And I enjoy making friends with many of you on the various forums. I'm presently just on three of them, but I don't post on RFM or some of the others yet. But if I do, it'll probably be censored. I'm not known for my tact, but if I make you laugh, then I hope it's a good day, because that's sometimes the best way to heal from some of the pain that we've had and difficulties, and many of us have paid a really, really high price for our choice to leave, losing our families, losing our homes, our businesses, our respect in the community. Some children, as we know, are sent out into the world completely bereft of all sustenance and support. And I, as a mother, I can't imagine choosing the church over my child, especially now that I know that the church isn't much to give up, but my children are prizes, but I have had to, like many of you, choose to be very, very careful in my relationship with them, because they're all still LDS and probably always will be. And I walk that very fine line and dance around those landmines and trip them way too often. And I understand what many of you have been through, and I hope that humor can help salve some of those wounds, and if I can offer really irreverent humor, then it's a good day.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm gonna jump the line here, baby, because I'm way too drunk to walk to the front. But I gotta go after the Dolly, the mama. I am the lady in the hat. And I have drank way too much. And I flew out here from Portland, Oregon. And I just have to say, darlings, information is what's going to kill the church. Sorry, babies. When people like me and the Colonel leave the church, I mean, total TBM, raised 6 children in the church, sent sons on missions. I have to tell you, though, 5 of them have left. One's still in, but she's smoking pot. She's in the primary presidency, but she's smoking pot.
So we have a request from SM, who is watching online, if SM can buy you a drink.
Well, everybody's buying me drinks tonight. That's my problem. I got Dennis buying me drinks. Everybody's buying me drinks. But, darlings, I got to say, I think information is what's going to bring it down. Because, you know, I grew up in the time when, to find out what I found out, I would have had to spend hours in the BYU library, and it's a click of the mouse. And I ran around to all my friends, and I was going, holy hell, do you know Joseph Smith looked in a hat? You know, nobody knows that. When you find out that kind of shit, it kind of brings it all down. So, I'm going to stay within my 3 minutes, and I was just going to say that I just love in life. My grandchildren think I'm a rock star. And me and the Colonel are doing good.
How do you follow the good-looking drunk in the back? That's a tough duty. I'm currently not intoxicated, but hopefully that will change in a couple of hours if you stick around. My name is Clint McKinley. I'm a sixth-generation Latter-day Saint. Some of you may have heard of my grandpa, Lynn McKinley. He worked at KSL for a long time. He was Lucifer in the first Temple film. I won't go there. But he was the Michael Ballum of his day, and you know, wrote some great gospel books. And my dad was I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut. He was a stake president when I was a kid. Go New England, wherever you are, Massachusetts. And go Red Sox. He was a mission president, so I've got all of this in my background. I served a mission to Brazil and graduated from BYU, got married in the temple, had 3 children. And I was sort of following that path of the archetypal member of my family, doing all the right things, pleasing my parents at every turn. I got the marijuana out of my system in high school, so I thought. But there's better stuff now, by the way. The finding out these things, I won't go through the whole process, but studied my way out, as many of you have. I was born with a keen mind, and it's a mind I wanted to use and not hide along the line of the box that was told. So I've gone through a lot of struggle. I'm recently divorced a couple years ago, separated. I have a severely autistic son that's in a group home here locally, and lots of questions swirling. There's a song by Linkin Park that recently came out, and the lyrics are, "I'm swimming in the smoke of bridges I have burned." And sometimes I wonder if that's me, you know, but I don't think I've burned any bridges. But I'm certainly, it's been a very difficult, to be intellectually free and to make some discoveries, there is a severe emotional price that you pay. And I've always been optimistic and happy, but I've gone through some very severe depression and battled that still. And so a lot of friendships, great, great friends that I had at BYU who I think are, think that I'm definitely falling off the wagon, off the reservation, and I'm probably a danger to them. So if any of you can shed any light on how to navigate that, I'd be happy to listen. I'm new at this. This is my first conference, and I am willing like a sponge to learn from people who have navigated the social waters and who have paid dear, dear emotional and psychological consequences for doing the right thing and being yourself. But I'm aware that things do get better. My 3 brothers have been loyal to me, regardless of their faith. They've been terrific, and I do believe that I have faith that things can get better. My girlfriend and I had a baby this summer, and there are other discoveries that have come that have been terrific since leaving. So if you're going through the fog, if you feel like you're swimming in the smoke of bridges you have burned, as the song says, remember you didn't burn any bridges, but you can get through it and to stay strong. And thank you for those who put this conference together, who do the great websites, for making us feel at home. Appreciate it.
All right, my name's Jonathan Higby. So I spent a year and a half in Portland teaching refugees, so I'm a little bit more accustomed to speaking publicly than when I was younger. So anyway, but I'm back in Salt Lake now. But for those who didn't spend their youth drinking, I wanted to introduce you to the 3 words, Long Island iced tea, which Which means that you get three shots for the price of one, or maybe one and a half. So otherwise, it's fairly expensive if you want to get drunk. Okay, so just remember those three words, especially in Salt Lake. So next, let's see. All right, so I left in 94, and I was at the time about 110 pounds heavier with thick glasses, and I got rid of both of those. So took a little time to get rid of both, but that was nice. And then after I left, I searched around, found the Unitarians for a bit, and I would like to tell you that as far as support group options, the South Church, South Unitarian Church here, recently had a presentation by their so-called atheist members, and at the end of it, the head of the worship committee got up and said that she wanted to come out as an atheist too, and that was the head of the worship committee. So I mean, you can do whatever you want, I mean, after you leave Mormonism, but I'm just saying that's one option, I suppose, for social support. So as far as the difficulty with leaving and the family thing and all this difficulty, I think one thing we have to realize is that religion is a natural phenomenon. If you read people like Daniel Dennett, that's one thing that he talks about. So, let's see, what else? With the Packer thing, the Packer talk and all his stuff with Spencer Kimball was a violation, I thought. In contrast to that, we have Joseph Smith sleeping with a 14-year-old, Brigham Young with a 15-year-old, Elohim with Mary, which I learned about at the Institute at the Community College. I guess the bottom line is I'm back in Salt Lake. I'm a single 43-year-old man with a house and a nice job. And also four parrots, and so so there's all sort of excitement going on in my house. And so that's my story, and thank you. Yeah.
My name is Richard Tierlink, and what I'd like to say is, as most of you know, Boyd K. Packer has been doing what he does really well, and that is heaping just loads of guilt and self-loathing on the backs of gay and lesbian Mormon teenagers. And those words are dangerous because thousands sustain Boyd Packer as an inspired man, and then they use his words to justify their accusations and hateful attitudes towards others. But something happened in Salt Lake just this last weekend that I think is useful information for everybody, and that is a wonderful scientist by the name of Caitlin Ryan gave a weekend workshop, and her work has been published in the journal Pediatrics, and it's available online, what has been published. But what I will read to you is just simply a very short synopsis of the results. And that is, higher rates of family rejection were significantly associated with poor health outcomes. On the basis of odds ratios, lesbian, gay, and bisexual young adults who reported high levels of family rejection during adolescence were 8.4 times more likely to report having attempted suicide, 5.9 times more likely to report high levels of depression, 3.4 times more likely to use illegal drugs, and 3.4 times more likely to report having engaged in unprotected sexual intercourse. And so what this really says is words like Boyd K. Packer's is a kind of bullying, and the best way to deal with bullies is you stand up to them. And here is some information. I'll have a stack of these if you'd like one. Just stop by and I'll be glad to give you one.
I just thought I'd quickly stand up here because this is my first conference. And my name is Mike Tweedy. I'm from Yakima, Washington. I wasn't raised there. I was raised in a small... What's that? Is she drunk? So anyway, I was raised in this hamlet called Boron, California, which is one of the only places worse than Barstow, California. And I know that many of you have passed through Barstow, California, so that's our closest neighbor. And in 2006 or so, I discovered Recovery from Mormonism and read that voraciously every day. And then finally in 2007, I logged on, you know. I really have to, this is where I would normally burst into tears, I guess, because I really have to credit all the various people on there. And you know who you are. Actually, you don't know who you are. You have no idea. But Cheryl knows who she is, and so a couple of other people, actually, you know, that were responsible for my drumming up the courage to write a big long letter to my bishop and my wife saying, you know, I'm out. I'm resigning as soon as you get this, you know. And so it was that. That happened in, I told him in November 2008, and then I finally sent in the letter. I wanted to get it in there at the, I wanted to start off the new year, so January 2009 was when I finally resigned. And I don't know why I stuck with it for so long, because I knew it was a crock, but you know how it is, it's a cult and everything. So I guess that's all I wanted to say. I do have 5 kids, 3 are out, and my wife and my 2 daughters remain. One of my daughters is married to an LDS chaplain, so that's going to be rough. Oh, and I forgot to say, I'm kludgy, if it matters, if anyone knows, but it's a good Scots word meaning toilet. So, but I love Scots words. So anyway, so, you know, what I didn't tell my wife is how so out of here, meaning out of the church, I am, because I will swear to you now that rather than ever return to the United, I mean, to the LDS church, I swear before God and these witnesses at this altar that rather than do so, I would suffer my life to be taken. So.
Boy, that's hard to follow. I'm Arza Evans, a retired economics professor. Thank you. Thank you so much. I think I brought enough of these complimentary books for everyone here. I don't want to take them back home. So if you got one last year, take another one for a relative or a friend. They're out there. And the first part of my book is presenting overwhelming scientific evidence that the Book of Mormon is a fraud. The DNA is just the tip of the iceberg. And if DNA evidence will convict rapists and murderers, it sure as hell will convict Joseph Smith. The second part of my book has to do with early Mormon practices. Some of the things that Joseph Smith did were just off the wall, illegal, immoral, you name it. Brigham Young. Well, Joseph Smith was charged with treason by the President of the United States. It's documented in my book here. Was charged with treason by the President of the United States, and they were out to arrest him when he was killed at Carthage. So they were after him. What would happen to this country if the Methodists, the Baptists, the Catholics, the Mormons, the Muslims each had a private army like Joseph Smith had? What would happen here? It was clearly off the wall. And and Brigham Young, you've all heard of the Mountain Meadows Massacre, but that was not the only one. There were some other massacres that took place that were blamed on the Indians. And by the way, do you have any idea what happened to the chest of gold that the Fancher Party was taking to California to buy land? It was taken to Salt Lake City and given to Brigham Young. And they had hundreds of beautiful horses. It was the richest wagon train that came through the West, and I think that's why they attacked it. It was highway robbery and murder, and they revere this man that instigated as a prophet, and we have a university named after him, and this university is going to get their ass kicked tomorrow in Texas.
Hi, my name is Lauren. I'm 36 years old. I am the mother of three children. My husband and I drove 12 hours to be here because I needed to stand publicly and thank those of you who have shared your personal stories. I was born and raised in the church, and I served a mission. I met my husband while we were both teachers at the MTC. It was my ultimate desire to please God. And slowly, my attempt to be a faithful LDS woman was killing me. When I finally got to the point where it was a choice between being Mormon or living, I gave myself permission to finally ask the ultimate question of if I truly believed. And when I was able to answer that, the blinders fell off, as for many of you. Almost instantaneously, the euphoria that I felt lasted briefly, and then the devastation of the fact that my entire life had been devoted to a church and a belief system that was the invention of a very clever man and many people who followed him was almost overwhelming. It was after I lost faith that I turned to the internet and I found many personal stories who helped me see that I was not alone and that there were many of you who had suffered through the same things. And that was when I learned the truth about the church. 2 years ago, my husband, which I am so fortunate I know, we left the church together. And I remember about 6 months ago when I had listened to many of the previous broadcasts of this conference, and I thought of the moment that I could stand in a room with people who would understand me, who would accept. And I sat alone in front of my computer and cried. I am very grateful to be here, and I want to thank you, all of you who have shared. And to anyone in the future who may listen to this broadcast, as all of us know, you are not alone. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to grab it before you. I had to go outside and have my private cry. Now I just need to get this out or I'll be crying all night. I was okay until Dolly Mama walked up there. Up. I was fine until Dolly Mama got up there and Micah cried. And Jenny got up. And I realized I would not be here today probably if it were not for finding you guys 6 months ago. The rage that consumed me 6 months ago, it actually scared everybody that was anywhere near me. And I was able to come on the board, I'm round 100 by the way, and rant and rave, and I received nothing but love and support, waves of it coming back. And when Dolly Mama got up there, I realized I would be very ungrateful if I did not publicly stand and say thank you to those of you that reached out to me, because you have truly made the difference in my life. I also came a long distance to come here. I got on a plane, which is something that I just don't do. It's not natural.
My husband was not really certain about letting me come to this conference, but he overheard me talking to Jenny in one of our Portland meetings, and I made the comment that I want to go so bad I would fly. On the way home, my tear-raised atheist has no concept of what I'm going through. Husband said, "You must go. If you want to go bad enough to be on a plane, you should be there." And I am so grateful to be here. And Micah, don't you think you're getting out without a hug? So I just want to thank everybody. And in the name of cheese and macaroni.
Hi, everyone. My name is Annie, and I have two brief messages I want to share today. The first is a message of complete gratitude. Last holiday season, I was really struggling with friends and family, and if it wasn't for the post-Mormon community, I don't know what I would have done. There were so many messages sent my way of love and of appreciation and offers to help and be there for me, and I'm just so incredibly indebted to each and every one of you today. The second's a brief story. I'm a college kid. I'm pursuing my undergrad. I have one science class I have to get through. It's called the History and Philosophy of Science. It's super exciting, I assure you. We were discussing, you know, like 1300s theology, and someone said, "Well, where did God come from?" Super sarcastically, I said, "Well, as man is, God once was." After class that day, a classmate approached me and said, "Oh, I didn't know you were Mormon." And I was able to look at them and say, "I'm not. I'm ex-Mormon." And it was the most powerful moment for me to be able to, like, hey, that's not who I am. That's who I was. And that led to awesome discussions, and they're now on their way out also. And it's been just an amazing experience. So thank you all, and thank you for your time.
I thought I'd have something profound to say, but more of just hopefully some laughs. on my mission... There was a missionary that didn't know women, or he thought women had penises. I thought that was kind of humorous and kind of reflected the way the church taught sexuality. But anyway, that's really not what I was came here to say. So everyone knows the. Praise Allah. Okay. Everyone knows the standard of truth. Yes. I rewrote it a little bit. Made a ex-Mormon standard of truth. I'm like standing like a general authority here, you know. The standard of truth has been erected. No subjective experience can stop the church from regressing. Cognitive dissonance may rage. Psychological biases may combine. Apologists may assemble. Intellectual dishonesty may remain. But the age of information will go forth boldly, nobly, and independent till it has penetrated every computer, visited every investigator, swept every family, and sounded in every gospel discussion, till belief without corroborated evidence has ceased, and the tax exemption status of the church shall be removed.
My name is Stan Zelensky. People know me on Post-Mormon as Corey. Used to be Cora Whore, the W. Took the whore off, so.
We can't hear you.
Sing on?
Yeah.
All right. So I just want to say, it's great. This is my first ex-Mormon conference. I've been ex-Mormon since September 11th of 2002, which was intentional. I experienced September 11th as not probably the way everybody else experienced it, but as a real existential crisis for me. That was when the God I believed in was as good as dead to me, because he didn't step in. And in that void rose up something decent and common and human and beautiful and loving. And that's enough. You know, we're enough, because that's all we have. There is no Superman who's going to drop down and save us from this insanity that, you know, consumes us. I was just in New York this 9/11, my short story, I'm not going to tell you my whole story. It's a long story, 48 years long. But I have a son who's 22. He's an ex-Mormon. He's the only other member of my family who has actually taken the time to resign other than me. When I left 8 years ago, I had raised him to be a good little Mormon boy. He was 14 years old, and you know, he had his life planned out for him. He was gonna, you know, he was a priesthood holder, and he was gonna, you know, become an Eagle Scout and go on a mission and go to BYU and marry, you know, this beautiful Molly Mormon girl and start popping out kids left and right, a whole tribe of them, right? Kind of like I did. And so, you know, when I told him, you know what, it's like, look, I'm going to be real with you. You know, I don't believe in any of this stuff. It's really ridiculous when you step back and look at it. You know, it really, you know, when you look at it objectively, it's amazing that we ever believed this bullshit, right? And he was shocked. He was blown away, right? And him and I battled, like really battled, you know, and he resented me. I tore the rug. Tore the rug out from under this young man. That's my biggest regret. I didn't do it sooner. I waited until he was 14 and really emotionally completely attached in every way to, you know, this bogus myth. And then, you know, I took the time to say, you know what, I'm not going to pretend. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to any of my kids. I'm not going to lie to any other kids. You know what, I'm done lying. I'm going to be honest. You know what, it's all bullshit. You know, and so that's the way I want to raise my kids. And my wife told me, she had told me, you know what, if you breathe a word, it's okay if you have these doubts, but if you breathe a word of these doubts to our kids, we're done. And I was willing to take that on. I was willing to take that. I'm not, really, these are our kids. You want me to lie to our kids, really? You know, and I was willing to get divorced, just to be honest with my kids. And it's one thing to delude yourself. It's another thing to delude your kids. It's another thing to lie to your kids. You know, you can't lie to your kids. And I couldn't lie to my kids, and that's what got me out. Now my son, he's 22, living the American dream. He's not Mormon. He's living in Brooklyn. He's working for David Letterman. He's you know, creating new art forms. Instead of wasting 2 years serving a mission, he went through and got a real education, and now he's loving life, you know. Life is good. You can raise your children outside of church. You know, if we empower our children to follow their genius, to follow their bliss, to follow their happiness, their potential is unlimited. And I think that raising children in a Mormon church is the best way to stunt children's potential. Thank you.
I've been driving all day from California, and I never expected that I would even get up here. But the reason I'm up here is because of my wife, who I've been married to for 3 years now. And, well, let me go back in history a little bit. I don't know how many generations we go back, basically to the beginning. I can name off some of these famous names of who I'm related to, and it really doesn't matter. But I'm the first one really in my family to take this step. And it's been really difficult because of the rejection. I never expected it to be so immediate and so severe. From a family of 8 kids, 7 boys, 1 girl. The only two who are my friends now are my 2 brothers who have been through a divorce and who have experienced life outside of the Mormon church. It's ironic. The other ones have completely rejected me and cut off ties with me, which has been very difficult. I'm proud to say that my mother has loved me through the whole thing, though, and she's still a true believing Mormon who I respect and love very much. I did the whole program. I went to BYU. I graduated. Shortly before I graduated, I started to get nervous, so I married a TBM like you're supposed to do. I didn't love her. I did it out of pressure. From the church. I did everything I was supposed to do for 13 years, waiting for the promised blessings, going through marital counseling, talking with various bishops who told me that if I would just live the gospel harder, like Spencer Kimball said, you know, any two people can learn to get along and love each other. It doesn't work like that. When I was on my mission, I was fortunate enough to meet someone, the most beautiful girl I've ever seen, actually, just showed up at the church one day, sister missionary. Had an immediate crush on her, which you're not supposed to do. We wrote secret letters back and forth. Kept the rules other than that, but we were desperately in love. 3 years ago, after not talking with her for 18 years, I never knew what happened to her. She found me again. And she's sitting in the back. I'd like for her to stand up, actually. To make a long story short, she's given me the courage to take this step. Like I said, I can't even imagine I'm standing up here right now. The last time I did a testimony, I was conducting a meeting. So the obligatory once a month testimony that I had to do, and I never felt comfortable doing it, but I feel very comfortable among friends here today. And I just want to say I'm looking forward to meeting you, and thank you for your support on the boards and being here. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Donna. I'm Donna from Pleasant Grove. I'm going to try to make this short and sweet. I grew up Mormon, very Mormon. I was really happy being Mormon. I was happy doing that. I've been out for almost 5 years, and I just want to say that being out has been so much better than being Mormon. I've never been so happy in my entire life. It's been absolutely wonderful for me, and I really want to congratulate everybody who has made it out. I think it's a big accomplishment, and I'm very impressed with all of you. The next thing I want to say, I think, is for the people that are listening who are not at this stage yet. I want to say that I think that integrity counts, and for those of you who are in still going to church because you think it's a good lifestyle, I think that that is bullshit. I think that truth matters and standing up and being heard matters. And if you know damn well that the emperor has no clothes, I think you should stand up and say he has no clothes. That's what I'm gonna say.
All right, that was my wife. I followed her into the church many years ago, and I followed her out. I won't go back in. But my name's Mark Whiting, and I'm from the Utah County group. I call it the compound. I've lived there my whole life. I grew up outside of the church. It was hard, and I wanted to be that perfect Mormon boy, dad, and I met my girlfriend in high school and decided to take that route and did it, the Elders' Quorum Presidency, Temple, all that stuff, and never felt quite right, just didn't feel right. But I was there, you know, and I was a part of that group that I wanted to be a part of for so many years. And gosh, we were sitting in Gospel Doctrine one day and mentioned the Kirkland Bank came up. And I was sitting next to my wife and she just got all mad and angry. And I'm like, calm down, you know, and that started everything, you know. And I was where I wanted to be, I thought. You know, I finally built this perfect LDS family, you know, and my friends could see me now, you know, and I struggled for a long time with my wife. I actually had contemplating leaving her because of it, which I can't even believe I got that tied up. You know, I wasn't really involved with the doctrine more so than the social part of it, you know, which I can't believe I got lured into it. You know, I kick myself every day that I let myself, me, become that way. But I'm grateful to my wife that she, that day, along with growing up, and she's seen a lot of polygamy in her side of the family through step-parents and stuff, and, you know, she's seen the light, and she left a lot of these books that some of you have wrote here tonight to where I read them, you know, and then we came up here 4 years ago to the first conference, and I argued with her the whole way. I said, well, I'm just going to meet a bunch of haters, you know, and found some really good friends here. And it was a good transition to come here and be a part of that. But anyways, I always feel it necessary for me to stand. This is my third year standing. I've only borne my testimony three times in my life. This is my third time up here. And I believe in this. I believe in what we're doing and what's going through. And we're involved in a Utah County crowd, you know, on leaving the church. You know, we have a group of people, and I encourage everybody to try to form these groups for support, especially those people who are here tonight that's never are transitioning out of the church. If we wouldn't have had certain people, it would have been really hard. And because of this group we have in Utah County, and we've gotten involved with this crazier crowd in Salt Lake County, you know who you are. but it's been great to get to know people, you know, and I encourage everybody. And that's why I believe I'm here every year. I'm going to be here every year for people who need that source. And those people who aren't here that are listening, I encourage you to be here. I don't post, but I stand here tonight, you know, and encourage everybody to try to not necessarily picket and do all that stuff, which some of you like to do. I just stand up for what you believe in and be true to who you are. And that's why I wanted to stand up here tonight. Thank you.
Hi. My name's Danielle, but I go by Sernia on the ex-Mormon forums. And I left the church in November 28, 2008, which was Black Friday. That was my intent. it was kind of hard since it was after Thanksgiving, and my family didn't take it very well. My mom actually quoted the scripture of the millstone tied around your neck should be drowned in the sea. Oh, I'm not telling you should be dead, but she was. And my brother had just come home from being kicked out of BYU Idaho, and he actually put the blame on God sent me back home so that I could bring you back from the church, back into the church. And that was his excuse to get away with the fact that he was doing things he wasn't supposed to do. I grew up in a family, my mom was raised by a Christian and a inactive member. And she ended up making friends in high school with Mormons, and it's like there was that sliver of a chance that I could have been raised outside of the church, and lo and behold, she had to go right back in. And she converted my dad when I was 9, and I remember when I was younger, I was disappointed that my dad couldn't baptize me. And he baptized my brothers and my sister, and I didn't get to have that. But he delivered me, so I guess that was the upside. So I grew up in the church in California. And in California, not very many members are around. And I didn't have very many close Mormon friends, except for the ones that I sat with in class. So most of my friends were non-members. And when I went to college, I really love theater, and, you know, the theater crowd isn't exactly one to be religious. And I started dating a non-member, and, oh, no, she's turning into a heathen. My parents didn't want me to attend any more theater classes, and they refused to pay for my classes. I got the 1 minute sign, so I need to speed this up. Okay, so grew up in a family, brother was physically violent, same one who tried to blame getting kicked out of church on God wanting him to save me. He was always beating my sister and I up, and I actually remember one incident where I tore him off of her, and we ended up having to go to a meeting with the bishop, and he told me that I should not have gotten involved, and that I should have just let him do whatever, and I shouldn't have intervened because it wasn't my place. To sit there and listen to him pummel her in the face. Sorry. And so after I left the church, I ended up having to move back home because I got laid off from my job. Back in July, I had been home for about a year and a half now, and my family was very well aware of my beliefs or lack thereof. And sorry, there was this night, and there were missionaries, and my parents were trying to convert this girl, and I couldn't bear to hear it. And I tried to sneak a note to her to tell her it was a lie, to don't go through with it. And she read it out loud, and my dad heard, and he laughed it off. And after they left, he told me to get out, get my things, and he didn't want me to come back. And so I went and I stayed with a friend. I came back, and we were packing my things, and I was in the middle of, you know, trying to get everything out. And my sister came and was yelling at me and my friend. And I called her a bitch. And she attacked me. And my friend had to pull her off of me the way I pulled my brother off of her. And I haven't spoken with my family since, and I don't know if I ever will. And I'm lucky enough to have close family and friends that are not biologically related to me that support me through all this. And I thank you so much, Insanity, for taking me in and helping me to get here. Because I wouldn't have been able to make it any other way. And I'm done. Thank you.
Shall I or shall you?
Want to flip a coin?
No.
You want to talk first?
Sure, thank you. I'm not getting on camera because I am still at the Board's University. I have the Lord's University. And if I go on camera, I have the possibility of losing my degree. And I'm 2 semesters away from getting out of that fucking boring-ass school. Well, thank you. I'm not losing it now. On eczema forums, I'm acoustic autistic. And I have to thank everyone here. The Board, the people, post-Mormon, ex-Mormon forums especially, Abinadi, Cernia, Wilson, Alphaba, and Insanity. You people have helped me keep my fucking sanity. Growing up, I was raped as a small child. It took my family 10 years and through a bishop's inaccurate story to believe that it happened. When, at that time, I came out to my mother right before that interview and said, I'm bisexual and I'm a pagan because I can't believe that as a woman I can have the power to have my own spiritual connection with God. If the wedding ceremony says the husband will be a priest unto God and the mother will be a priestess unto the husband, fuck that shit. God is my God and I cannot be far from him. When that happened, my father threatened to kick me out of the house. And only last Christmas did we ever resolve that fact. In order to run away from home, from that situation, I graduated early from high school and went to BYU. Fucking big mistake, kids. And I finally, throughout my fluctuations back and forth between different religions, since I've been religiously surfing everything there is since I was 7, when I first discovered Islam and found Ramadan and asked my mom, hey, can we celebrate Ramadan? No, we're Mormon. Throughout that entire wave and process, I I found XMO forums and Insanity, my Dolly Mama. She, reading her work, helped me say, I'm not a fucking Mormon. I might be in this church, I might be in this school, I might not be able to get out for God knows how long, but here, right here, I am not a Mormon. I am bi, I am open, I am who I am. Am I done? I'm sorry, that's 1 minute. Thank you. Sorry. Gotta read from a script. Just how I interact in social interactions. I found my spirituality and I found my God despite my bad social interactions as an autistic person. I found it despite being deeply in love with an ex-fiancé that left me after he learned about my situation and about my lack of faith. He was cheating with another girl anyway. Despite all that, and despite the fact that I'm at the Lord's University, I am me, and no one can take that away. Thank you.
Boy, a fighter, that's great. Not my first time here at the conference. My name is Russ. And 35 years in the church. Ward clerk, high priest group leader, the whole bit. I ended up getting divorced. I got two wonderful sons. When I found out the truth, like the exmormon.org, I went to apologize to my sons. Well, they end up being inactive anyway. They never wanted anything to do with it. And I said, Dad, we just kind of waiting for you to come around. We knew it was all junk anyways. So I was really anticipating to talk to them. And I felt, you know, and they were here, you know, telling me, don't worry, Dad, it's all baloney. We never got into it. We didn't want to tell you that. Well, good. So anyways, I'm from Connecticut. Apparently, I'm the only Mormon left in Connecticut. Now I'm the only ex-Mormon in Connecticut. I think that's why Tommy Gunn Monson wanted to build a new temple in Hartford, Connecticut, because he wanted to reactivate me. Well, I got news with Tommy S. Monson, whatever his name is. Tommy Gunn, yeah, I like Tommy Gunn. This guy never going back to that worthless, fraudulent organization. Thank you very much.
My name's Daryl, born free on Postmo. I'm amazed at how many familiar names are here this year who weren't here last year. Last year was my first. I got on a plane 26 hours ago in Brisbane to be here tonight. I've got competition this year. I see Jim has flown from England, and I haven't got down to spinning the globe round to see which ones of us wins, but we've both come away. But I want to do a very quick survey, because I don't have a forum like this where I can ask this question. I see the church talk about choice so much. Free agency. How many lessons did you sit there with your mind going while they tried to make this stuff make sense? But to listen to the homophobes stand up there and prattle on about homosexuality or gender being a choice. Now, listening to them, I'm the only person who sort of, about puberty, hourglass-shaped human beings just started to be particularly damn interesting. I just have developed complete amnesia about the day when I thought, guys or chicks? Guys or chicks? Which way will I go? So those who actually, and I'm not wanting to put down a percentage of the population who probably did and may still have, genuinely be able to have a choice. But I suspect, and I'd like all those who had an experience like me where it was a no-brainer, to put up your hands. and we've got about 80% of the people in the room, which says to me something very, very interesting about the people who stand up and say, it's a choice, which suggests for me that for them it was a choice. And they're now saying they're on the straight and narrow, which makes them closeted. How did Ted Haggart put it? He sort of had quite quiet phrasing he used. I was here a year ago. I can't believe how quickly the weekend went. I was here, my plane didn't fly out to Montreal until the Monday morning, so I was here by myself Sunday night, and it was quite interesting to sit and just have the whirlwind of the weekend distill over me. There was a sense of mourning, because I had felt that I was in a place where I was with other minds who had thought and felt what I had felt. So it's a joy to be back, and particularly a joy to see a lot of people, or at least have seen the names, and I'm looking forward to catching up with a lot of people who I've interacted in POSMO with over something like 5 or 6 years now. Great to be here.
Hi, we're Tanis and Tanis's wife on the board, so I have to bring him up because he's my security blanket. So, Sean and Stacy. Okay, Sean and Stacy. We're from Utah County. We're part of that whole group. And I just wanted to take a minute to publicly thank my husband for talking to me a little over a year ago. He was so incredibly nervous about, after he found everything out, approaching me, because he didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't, you know, because we'd been raised in the church. I'm ninth generation. And we'd done everything we were supposed to, really good, really active. But nothing fit. Nothing worked. And so he talked to me about a year ago, and I was actually in the same place he was. My shelf had fallen down on top of me, too. And the fact that I found out that it wasn't me that had the problem. It was the organization. I felt like I was alone, because the way the organization sets itself up, they've got a win-win situation. If everything's going great, it's all because of them. If everything's going wrong, it's because you're not living up to their expectations. And so, and we were fortunate enough to get out just before our son's 12th birthday. And we were able to talk to him before he had to go through all of the young men's. We've got a teenage daughter. And we were able to, and I want to thank her leaders, actually, for their overabundance of attention when my husband and I just stopped going. I mean, we were really active, and we just quit 1 week, just done. And so her leaders tried to step in, and they gave her a little more attention than she needed. So because of that, and after girls' camp, she was done. So we were able to get out as a family, which I'm very thankful for. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, my name is James Hill. I was going to try to do a general authority impression, but I didn't have enough Quaaludes, so. Tal, are you still here? I'm sorry I made very bad references and made aspersions that you masturbate to BTO, so. sorry about that. If you even remember that, you probably know who I am. Thank you all for coming, I guess. And just wanted to say how great an opportunity is to be here and to participate in this conference and all other former Mormons and who have come to meet and to talk with one another and to, I guess, build a community. Thank you. I know that the church is not true. And, you know, I know that with every fiber of my being. So, so thank you all. And, you know, the internet is killing the church. So slowly but surely. I'm just so grateful to be here. Longtime listener, first time attendee. So thank you and have a great day, guys. See you around.
So my name is Britta, like the water filter. This is my first year here. I'm from Texas. I'm a third-generation Mormon. My grandfather was converted, so I blame him. And I'm the first one in my family out, to his great disappointment. He tells me that he's very sad that I will be going to hell and he will not be able to see me. I left the church completely and my husband about 4 years ago, and it pulled me out of 5 years of very deep self-destructive depression. And I've never looked back. I've never been more poor in my life, but I've never been happier. And I have a beautiful daughter now that I adore. I've never been so rich. I can't say spiritually, but in other ways. the board really provided a great place for me to talk to other people who knew what I was about and knew where I came from. In Texas, you don't find a lot of ex-Mormons or anything but Christians very often. So the board has really helped me. It's been a great therapeutic tool for me, and I thank you guys. And I'm looking forward to having my first year here at the conference.
I appreciate the spirit that's being felt in this room. my name is Verna Baer, and I'm from Provo, Utah County people. I am originally from Tonga, South Pacific, supposedly a Lamanite. And I would like to introduce my husband. Would you please stand up, Brett? I want to give him all the credit for where we are today. On our way here, this is our very first year. And you have no idea how excited he was to be here. On our way here, he says, let's see, what do I call myself, an ex-Mormon or a post-Mormon, you know, going through all of these. And then he said, well, what do you want to call yourself? I said, too sexy for Mormonism. about 4 years ago, our oldest son, we have three kids, a girl and two boys, 23, 22, and 18. And 4 years ago, our son went on the ship performing for 9 months, dancing ballroom. And of course, he called us, you know, not called us, but on Facebook, you know, he has a relationship with this guy named Tony. It was a shock. Of course, the dad wrote him back on Facebook, you know, he's an abomination, blah, 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 all of those things. He started studying homosexuality for a whole year, basically 24/7. He came to the conclusion that he was going to choose his son over the religion. That's when... That's when he said, well, if homosexuality is wrong, what about other issues? So we basically studied ourselves out. So last, we have not left the church. Well, my husband has sat home, not gone to church for probably since last September. And our goal, our daughter was married in the temple. A month later, got a divorce. That was last year. We have discussed religion in our house almost every single day. And I can tell you there is no greater gift that we have given our kids but to be able to think on their own. Our goal for our family is when our daughter comes back from France next year, we will be ex-Mormons July 4th. So we're looking forward to that. But when Elder Packer was talking during conference, you can obviously tell how I felt, you know, about his statements on homosexuality. Last Mother's Day, last year's Mother's Day, I put a thing on my wall, every mother deserves a gay son. So I am so glad, we're so excited to be here and to get to know a lot of you, even people from Utah County, we're next door to each other, but we want to be part of the group and be able to come back every year. And thank you very much.
Let's are you the only one that's up here that wanted to? Okay, let's do these two and then you. Okay. Oh, you're ready to go.
Okay, I just had to hurry and jump up because then if the Lamanite could get up, then Cain's daughter could get up too. I don't want to be on camera yet because I'm still paranoid, but okay, the tears are starting. Hold on. Last year, I sat in my room listening to the conference, bawling. How many months could I not get out of bed? I couldn't raise my kids anymore. I thought that I didn't need to be here anymore. It was all too confusing for me. This man right here started all the problems.
Joseph Smith started the problem. Nothing to do with it.
I'm a second generation Mormon. My mom converted. She's very strong. And I love my family very, very, very much. So it hurts to feel like I'm a disappointment to them. But things were confusing for me. Growing up, I lived in Utah as a little girl, but then I moved to the South. And, you know, I had other black people come up to me and ask me, "Why are you Mormon? Why are you Mormon? We don't understand why you're Mormon. Don't you know what Mormons have to say about you?" And I just always would brush off everything they said, and I knew. I mean, I knew because I was taught, my mom taught me, and I felt love at church that I was right. And so I just always pushed everything aside. After we got married, we had two little girls. He couldn't stand the fact anymore that they were biracial, and think that they had a curse. And he didn't want me to think that about myself. He didn't want me to think that I was less valiant than anybody else. So even though I thought he was hurting me, I realized that he was loving me. So I'm grateful to him for that. And I'm grateful for all my Utah County friends. And if this can help someone else out there, because I was very, very, very faithful. And I know that there's probably someone out there that felt the same way. And if I can be okay, they can be okay.
Hi, I'm Christina, and I need a lot more liquid courage to be up here. But and I never would get up and bear my testimony when I was in the church. The only time I was able to do it was when I was on my mission and I could hide behind the language. But I just wanted to say to my husband, thank you for giving me this birthday present. Coming here was my 44th birthday present, so I'm very grateful to him for that. And I wanted to say to the man from Connecticut, the reason why they're probably putting in a temple there is because that's where Glenn Beck lives. So they probably have a really large tithing base there. Last week, and I got to go to a part of Affirmation in San Francisco and be with some of the people that were in that video and hang out with them. And now I'm here this week. So we've had a great last weekend, and I'm looking forward to this weekend. And I wanted to say to the mother who's too sexy, where is she? Sexy mom. You, yes. I completely agree with you, and I'm very grateful that I don't have to raise my children in this church, because when my son was 4 years old, he told me that when God made him, he made a mistake, and that he put the wrong chemicals in his brain to make him like girl things instead of boy things. So when people say it's not inbred, they are completely out of line, because they've obviously never had a child who would prefer to go to the Hello Kitty store over play with Power Rangers. And the ballroom dancing thing should have been your first clue, or maybe your... So you shouldn't have been shocked at that. Your gaydar must have been turned off because you were living in Provo, I'm assuming. You're not close enough to San Francisco. Okay. They were girlfriends. They were, yeah, okay. So, huh?
Naturally.
Yes. Okay. No, I'm really tired. We've been driving all day. But I'm just really happy to be here, and I'm very excited. So thank you. Oh, and I just wanted to say one more thing. I'm very grateful that I served a mission, because that's where I met the most amazing man. And I never would have been happily married had I not met him. So.
Well, I've always been blamed for keeping meetings running long, so this is fine. I'm Eric from Portland, also Lesmon on the forums, but I've been inactive lately, so I'm sorry. We have a great group in Portland, and so many others got up. I had to do it. Last year, I wanted to get up and talk, but I hadn't come out to a lot of family. I came out basically to my inactive sister, and that was it. By now, thanks to Facebook, lack of correct security use, a lot of my family knows. So. Hi, siblings and nieces and nephews, and hopefully not mom. they don't have internet, so we're okay. That's why they still believe. I just briefly, my journey out of the church was a little bit odd. Like many of you, it began by reading a book, and you think about the first book that made you maybe question or think, and probably like me, it was judgment and managerial decision making. No, okay. Studying for a master's degree, I was reading this book as part of a class, and they go through cognitive biases and how, as a manager, not to make bad decisions for things like investments or projects or whatever. And things like, if you have an idea about a project, you'll continue to believe that's the best project, even if you're faced with evidence that it's maybe a failed project or another project is better. And I was like, that's a lot like church. No, that can't be it. After a while, I read a number of other books about this topic, and I realized that because of the patterns and practices and habits instilled in us in a cult, we would believe even if it's all made up. I realized that I would believe even if it was fake. And I went and redid Moroni's promise. See, I'm already out that far. I went and redid Moroni's promise, and I prayed as hard as I ever had in my life, and I can tell you from the deepest part of my soul, I got no answer. Nothing happened. And I came to believe that God is probably made up. And at this point, I had a conversation with my wife about it, and I decided for the first time in my life to look to see if it were possible, if there's any evidence that maybe, just maybe, there's some problems with Mormonism. Surprisingly, I found some. And a few months later, I was out. I was reading on my Kindle, amazed at technology and where we've come as a society, and I was going in a train across the Tuscan landscape where I had served part of my mission, and I was reading an essay by Bob McHugh. And going across the Tuscan landscape at sunset in Italy, decided, I am no longer a Mormon. I am not part of this anymore. I wanted to bear a quick testimony of parenting can still work, even in a mixed faith relationship. My wife is still 100% in. We decided she's been very good about my bitter apostasy, and we've done a 50-50 program with parenting. And for those of you who are getting into that phase and questioning it, does it work, I can tell you that I have a firm testimony of reality. And it only takes about 10 minutes a week to counteract 3 to 5 hours of cult indoctrination. So there is hope, and we'll learn more techniques, I'm sure, this weekend. Have a good conference, everyone.
My name's Sandy, and I am Katie Wren on the ex-Mormon forums, and I've only been there a few weeks. To be honest, my name is still on the roll. It's been on the roll for about 13 years. I've been inactive for about 12 and a half, or longer, actually. It was very brief. The missionaries came. I had been recently dumped. I was lonely. I had to move because I couldn't afford to live where I was living. And these missionaries came, and they were so nice, and they were so friendly. So I listened to what they said. I've listened to this sort of thing before, though. I was Presbyterian and Pentecostal, and honestly, I can't remember them all. But, you know, I've tried everything, and here was one I'd never heard of. Oh, I was living in Northern Ontario, so no Mormons, really. No Mormons, really, not really. So I'd never heard of them. So I read the Book of Mormon, and they asked me if I believed if it was true and pray and all that, and I thought, well, I'll lie and say it is, because then they'll let me in. And so they did. And then I moved, and I got baptized, and I attended 3 or maybe 4 Sunday meetings, and I heard something that just horrified me. Completely horrified me, and I started backing away. And they came after me. They honestly, they did. They staked out the apartment that I used to live in. A friend of mine who was still living there was telling me, the missionaries are out here waiting for you. But I don't live there. And then I moved really far away. You know, I moved to another province, and then I moved to another province, and then I moved to the United States into the middle of the Mormons. And that's where I'm at now, is I want out because I might be recognized, and I want to support the rest of you who... Sorry, your journeys are so much more difficult than mine, but it makes me angry that such a thing exists and destroys so many people and won't let you go, and they just won't let you go. Anything I can do to help, you know, you guys come up and tear them down, I'm with you. That's it.
Well, as many expressed, a lot of people drove a long way today or flew a long way, and everybody's kind of tired. But we wanted to remind you that as we dismiss, the room next door, for those of you who haven't been before, is full of drink and snacks, and it's called their hospitality room. And there is a little cash jar in there for those who didn't contribute or bring anything. You can stick a few dollars in there if you would please to help us with the expenses. But the time for the rest of the evening is yours, and please try to be on time in the morning. Check your program for the time, and because we have a very full day scheduled with very short breaks. Oh, there is one thing I forgot to tell you. I better do it again in the morning, but those who've been before, we've always had, you know, a morning pastries and things, and then there's a break in the middle of the morning, and then another one in the afternoon. But this year we're trading the one in the afternoon for our concert, our coffee house concert on Sunday morning, so there'll just be two snack breaks tomorrow. But there's plenty of food. I mean, there's more than we can eat, because we always have those good breakfasts at the hotel, the ones that are staying here. So we will see you in the hospitality room, and right on time in the morning, please. Bye.